Do you like film? Do you like comedy? Do you like your childhood memories?
One more take?
Yeah.
Lewis and Pete's bad nostalgia film club.
Each episode sees comedian Lewis Charlesworth and Pete Phillipson revisit a classic childhood film through the eyes of an adult to see how messed up it truly is. Be it Back to the Future for its story of incest, Mrs. Doubtfire for its tale of the creepy cross-dressing father babysitter, or Home Alone with its sinister home invasion toddler torturer nightmare.
Bad nostalgia.
Hello, you beautiful people, the beautiful digital radio listeners out there for Fab Radio International. Welcome to Bad Nostalgia Series 2 with me, comedian Lewis Charlesworth.
And me, comedian Pete Phillipson.
Oh my God, Pete, here we are, we're back.
I can't believe it. It feels like an eternity,
doesn't it? Doesn't it? But at the same time, it feels like it was yesterday since we were here, just talking, getting a feel for it all over again. Oh, have you had a good time? How did you feel the 4 weeks? Well, 5 weeks. It was supposed to be 4 weeks, wasn't it? And then we were told to keep away for an extra week, and now we're back again.
But do you know what? I went back to the film we're doing today, and I think tonight is going to be all the more juicy.
I know,
because of it.
It's so appropriate that Back to the Future is the first show we're doing.
It's fate almost, isn't it?
It's perfect. Do you know what? It didn't even occur to me that we were starting with Back to the Future when I was celebrating, you know, Back to the Future Day.
Back to the Future Day, yeah.
30th year anniversary. The day we've all been waiting for years. I was waiting for that more than I was waiting for the millennium to come around. That was the day we're going to get a hoverboard, you know, a flying car.
And we're going to do a mum.
You're going to do your mum. Oh, there we are already. Oh, you know where we're going with this, don't you, people? But no, it's Back to the Future. It's just, oh, God, absolute stonking great kids film.
Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful.
Absolutely.
And you were saying before, because every time we meet before the show, we always end up having a preliminary show where Pete tries to talk to me about things. And I'm saying, no, Pete. Save it for the show. And you were saying to me that Back to the Future was pretty much the most special kids film that we've done so far to you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
so shall we kick things off with the nostalgia? Let's go straight into it, shall we? We're pros now. We know what we're doing. Even though I just talked over you. So hit it, Michelle, with a bit of nostalgia music whilst we talk nostalgically about Back to the Future. So, Pete, you want to kick things off. This has a very special place in it.
It does. The year was 1985.
1985, the year of my flipping birth.
I was not even a twinkle
here, were you?
In my mother's eye.
Is this the first time we've filmed that predates the Pete Phillipson birth?
The Pete Phillipson birth, yeah.
Flipping it. That's like flipping...
I wasn't even...
BC and AD. We're finally in the BP.
Yeah.
Petrol. Sorry. God.
It was... Yeah. 1985. Okay. Yeah. Now...
Predating
me.
The world was a dark place.
It was. This film is the first thing I think of when I think of my childhood.
Wow.
I swear to God.
That is a statement.
Honestly, it's...
That's a statement and two-thirds...
If I went to a psychiatrist and she went, "How was your childhood?" I'd just go like, "Back to the Future."
Yeah,
that is honestly the first thing I say. I'm not just saying this for the show. Honestly, right. I swear it's the first thing I think of.
Yeah,
because everyone just wanted to be Marty McFly.
Yeah,
like, you know, he was young, he was good looking, he had a skateboard, he played the guitar.
Essentially, you're saying it's not just a great film. The film is part of you.
The film is part of me. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's everything like I wanted to be. He was cool. Like, he played the guitar, he had a skateboard, he had a fit girlfriend. But it was great because
who could change her face?
Exactly. It was great because he was a bit of an underdog as well, which you relate to. He had a bit of a temper.
He
was a short ass. He didn't like the idea of failure, and he felt very much an outsider with his family.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He had a massive chip on his shoulder.
Yeah,
the chip was bigger than him.
He loved them, but he wanted things to be better for them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And he felt very bemused, I think, at how sort of his family could just get on with everyday life and he couldn't.
Yeah.
And that's something I really related to. And also, just the whole... It was... this film, it was at sort of the... Like, it was at the height of, like, the material world. It was in mid-1980s.
Mid-1980s.
And it just...
Pinnacle,
you know,
absolute
it
booming.
It just accelerated my sort of fascination with America and just the whole concept of time travel fascinated me. Uh-huh. And what was amazing, that I was so young, but I got everything in the film as well.
You got it first time?
Yeah,
out,
yeah, and I got it even when I was that young.
Because I had a double whammy of an experience. I had what you had when I was a very little kid and my formative years. You know, I was growing up, I grew up with the film. So much of it washed over me, so much of the subtext, so much of the actual text of it, the whole thing with his mum, which we're going to go into later, when we're not being nostalgic. That just completely washed over me. It also was hoverboards, flying cars, the dock, fun, all that kind of stuff. The second one was my favourite, just because it had more of the gadgets. I saw it in a very surface level, and then I revisited it as an adult, and I kind of appreciated it at least just as much as I did as a kid, but from a completely different perspective. Like, now I'm like, oh, the writing is amazing. Nearly every line is a callback to something that happens or is about to happen. Just, you can see why it was nominated for an Oscar for the screenplay.
Yeah.
Just, you don't expect that with a kid's film, but it's so densely written. There's so many jokes in it. There's so many things that are referencing other things.
Yeah.
It's a genius film. Genius.
It is, yeah.
And I've just, obviously with the focus of the nostalgia element of it all, and it's just, it was same with me, it was a real part of my upbringing. It was more than a film. I think it didn't occur to me to put this into the first series, because when someone says Back to the Future, I don't think of it like it was a film. I just think it was like it was my history. Imagine, why would I do my childhood? We're not talking about my childhood, we're talking about films. That is a film. It's not my life. So, anything else you want to cover in the nostalgia?
Do you know what? I think I got so into it there. I think I've said all I need to say.
You got into it more than you have with any other film we've talked about.
I know.
We've teed this up beautifully, haven't
we?
Oh, and our listeners, you just can't wait for us to get all juicy.
Should we tear it a new one?
It's really about... We're going to tear it a new one, but first we're going to listen to the trailer, the original trailer from Back to the Future.
Spielberg presents Back to the Future, a Robert Zemeckis film. Marty leads an ordinary life.
No McFly ever amounted to anything in the history of Hill Valley.
Yeah, well, history is going to change.
And 1985 is not his year. But Dr. Brown is about to change all that.
Are you telling me that you built a time machine? Kind of a DeLorean?
He's sending Marty 30 years back in time.
It's a flying saucer from outer space!
Now, he's trapped in the past.
This has got to be a dream.
About to meet...
Chocolate.
...his future father.
He's a peeping Tom. Wow!
And he's making an impression on his mother.
He's an absolute dream. And he can sleep in my room.
Any of you do could have serious repercussions on future events.
Now, he's got to make his mother and father fall in love.
For crying out loud, I haven't even been born yet.
And only Dr. Brown can help him get back to the future.
Are you telling me that this sucker is nuclear?
Precisely.
Michael J. Fox.
Whoa, this is heavy.
Christopher Lloyd.
There's that word again, heavy. Why are things so heavy in the future? Is there a problem with the Earth's gravitational pull?
Back to the Future.
Hello, and we're back. Do you remember it? Do you remember it, listeners? Do you remember that beautiful, innocent little childhood film, Back to the Future? So squeaky clean, so Christian, so pure. Or is it? Okay, good. So, the first section of the film, or shall we just, in a nutshell, the synopsis of the film.
You go. Do the synopsis.
Synopsis, in a nutshell, is... You got a little kid, he's 17, he's a mate of a professor who's invented a time machine. He gets in the time machine, accidentally activates it, goes back in time 30 years prior to the original point where he is, to 1955, and he can't make his way back. Hence, Back to the Future. So, it's all pretty good, all pretty standard, high concept, nice, like it.
Yeah.
You got Michael J. Fox in his debut film role. No, it's not his debut film role at all. We had Teen Wolf, what am I talking about? I'm still ill. Where do we go? We're kicking things off.
Okay.
We've got a relationship between Marty McFly and this
dog. Can I kick things off?
Yeah.
Okay. So I never realised this until I watched it, you know, last week in preparation for the show.
Good lad.
Why is a 17-year-old boy hanging out with an old man?
With a 70-year-old professor.
How did they meet?
Yeah.
It is never explained.
Never, ever explained. There's never any hint of why they might like each other or know each other. And why does his parents let him hang out with him all the time? But he's clearly not doing very well at school. He's clearly a bit of a delinquent. He rides on the back of cars while he's on his flipping skateboard. So why are they letting this truant little boy?
It's like I said before, he's this cool kid with, like, he plays guitar, he's got a fit girlfriend. Why is he hanging out with Doc Brown? Because at this point, Doc Brown hasn't really done anything successful. He hasn't invented time. He's not able to time travel yet. He's just a batshit crazy scientist. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
He's got a massive speaker in his living room for some bizarre reason.
Why has he got that?
It's a sort of chitty chitty bang bang esque kind of weird mechanism that creates dog food for his weird, disgusting, hairy mutt.
Yeah.
And it's just, you open in his house, Marty's in this Doc's house before school on like a Wednesday. What did you do before you go to school? I went to Happy Tots. I didn't go hang around at some weird, creepy professor's house. Sorry.
And he's not, and he hasn't even seen the DeLorean either. So he's not like thinking, oh, I wonder if he's going to have a stroke.
Yeah.
He'll leave me this in his will.
Exactly.
He hasn't even seen the DeLorean.
He's not hanging around thinking, oh, I'll just pop into that DeLorean and check out, you know, a bit of Hitler or something and do well in history lessons and stuff like that.
He's
like, no, this guy hasn't invented shit.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, what is the appeal? I don't get it at all.
I don't understand.
And he's not a normal doctor. He's not like, oh, I just love hanging around that old guy because he's cute. You know, it's a bit weird us having this relationship. But he's really harmless. He looks after me when because my mum's an alcoholic, my dad's lame. So I go, he's like a childminder. No, because he's actually quite a dangerous, threatening professor, isn't he? Because what does he deal with? He deals in arms and plutonium. He buys plutonium off Libyan terrorists. To propel this kind of time-travelling machine.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, he's got dodgy principles. He's got no morals.
Were Libyans as well, were they like the go-to terrorists of the 80s?
I think they were. It's very pre-9/11, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Because it's like they had to say, right, well, it's the 80s, and like we need some brown people to pin this on. Who haven't we invaded yet?
Yeah.
I know, Libya. Yeah.
I think it's very kind of Reagan-era terrorist-friendly kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's clearly very, obviously, pre-9/11. You wouldn't have, like, Monsters, Inc. You wouldn't have, like, oh, shall we get the Israeli Defense Force to help us with our dreams and nightmares? Kids. I mean, you just wouldn't go there, would you?
No.
It's very much predates 9/11, very much so. So we've got that really bizarre relationship, and Marty's very truant and he rides on the back of cars. Doc Brown deals with plutonium and Libyan terrorists. So I suppose the thing that they do have in common is that they both like to act outside the law together, don't they?
Yeah.
So, but again, for an old man and a young kid, for that to be the one thing that unites them, this doesn't reek of kiddies film so far.
No. And also, when when Marty McFly, when we first see him at school, and there's the principal, Mr. Strickland, and he stops him and goes, have you been hanging out with Dr. Emmett Brown? He's bad news. And it's like, how the hell does the principal know who he is?
Why does he know this?
Does Doc Brown just stand outside the school every year, just like looking for a new whipping boy, just with a pack of licorice all sorts, like just waiting for his next accomplice?
Yeah, because like you say, he hasn't invented anything yet. So why is he this notorious professor? He's notorious for something else.
Yeah.
The biscuits, what you just said, I think. So we've got that. And then they meet up in the evening. He's got, I've got this new invention. And they stand in the middle of an empty car park. And they set the thing off. And then the Libyan terrorists find him. There's a lot of swearing. There's lots of shit this, shit that, bastard, that kind of stuff. Which we've seen a lot in the 80s with Goonies. And then he ends up going back to the past, accidentally, to 1955. And that's when we start to kind of... Things start to evolve furthermore, don't they? I mean,
we
do get, before they do actually, he crash lands in the barn of some kind of Republicans from the time, I imagine.
Because
there's that weird nuclear family that see him in the car in their shed.
And
then the door opens, and then they're just like, oh my God, it's an alien, we need to shoot him.
Even though
it's clearly just a car, but it's just because it's a car they don't recognise, they're like, oh, we've got to kill him. It's like someone just driving up a 1984 Lada up your street, and you're just like, right, we've got to kill him. I don't recognise that Lada. Predates my birth. Die.
It's such a stereotype, isn't it?
Yeah.
It would have been rubbish if he'd crash-landed, anywhere else in just a really, posh, just, normal middle-class family. It would have been, absolutely fine. But no, they had to make him, absolute hicks.
Yeah. So he's driving in his car, and he gets to... He gets to Sunny... What's it called? Sunnydale? Hartfield.
Sunnydale. No.
What's it called?
Hill Valley.
Hill Valley. I almost said Springfield.
What was Sunnydale?
I don't know. Sweet Valley High?
Sweet Valley High.
I've never seen it.
That's next series.
Yeah, so have you got any other points from the first half of the film?
Which whereabouts are we going up to?
Yeah, where's the halfway mark? Are we going to start... Are we going to get to the point where he meets his mum, or should we start that as the second section?
Let's start that with the second section, because I've got another little bit here.
Okay.
We're going to talk about Mayor Goldie Wilson.
Oh, yes, I know where you're going with this. And who's Mayor Goldie Wilson, Pete?
Mayor Goldie Wilson, prior to becoming mayor, is basically a young black man who sweeps the floors, okay, in 1955, but he actually ends up, you know, running for mayor in the future in 1985. Yeah. And it's weird because this film does very little to address the segregation issues that were going on at the time in 1955. Do you know what I mean?
It does.
And this is the best that they do basically to address it. There's a black guy who goes, "I'm going to be mayor." And then his white boss just goes, "Shut up." And they're like, "Yeah, that'll do." We've addressed racism.
They don't really do very much with it.
We've addressed racism in 1955. That's all we need to do.
There is one other bit where they do talk about race, where race is randomly brought up, even though it's completely whitewashed throughout the whole film. It's right at the end when the band are getting out of their car, Biff's mates see them.
Yeah.
And then he says, "Beat it, Spook." And he says, "Who are you calling Spook, Peckerwood?"
Yeah,
and then
they
all get out of the car. And it's like a proper kind of showdown between white and black. And it jars so much. It's like, well, where were you the rest of the time?
Yeah,
You know, Grease, the film Grease, kind of is notorious for the way it completely ignored any facts of racism back in the 50s.
Yeah, yeah,
and this
is
it here, but then it randomly just throws it in there.
Yeah,
as
if
it's like, yeah, well, we're going to occasionally adhere to the reality of the period with this one bit. And it's like, well, be consistent with it.
The thing about that bit as well is, so you've got like Biff's gang that like put Marty in the boot of the band's car.
Yeah.
And then one of the band comes out and he goes like, "Beat it." And they goes, "Hey, get away from my car." And one of Biff's gang goes to him, "Oh, beat it, Spook." And they go, you know, "Who you calling Spook?" And all the black guys just like chase them away. And it's meant to be this real bit of like, you know, the black man standing up to the white man. It's like, don't you be racist to us. But it's just ruined by the fact they're all getting really stoned.
To be honest, I didn't think it needed any of that at all, because it, what's the point in trying to adhere to kind of the reality of the situation in 1950s? Because it's not exactly a realistic film when you've got like a professor with a dog and a spaceship time travelling machine. It's like, well, why even bother kind of trying to be realistic whatsoever? I think the person behind it actually had a bit of fetish for a bit of racism.
You reckon?
Yeah, just used it.
Racial bonus points.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so we're going to have a few more words from our sponsors, and then we're going to get to the real meat and two veg of the film, excuse the pun, but it's very appropriate, for the second section of the film, but see you soon.
Bad nostalgia.
Elliot, look what I made for you.
And we're back. Thank you very much. You are listening to Bad Nostalgia Series 2 with me, Pete... not Pete Phillipson. Oh, I'm so ill.
I wish I was Lewis Charlesworth.
Oh, do you, mate?
I do. Just for a day.
Just look at yourself in the mirror naked, have you? Yeah, just kind of jump up and down, see how it flaps. Right, so obviously this show is not for children, but it is about childhood films. We talk about it from an adult perspective, where it's casual to talk about your penis every now and again if you feel like doing that. Right, here we go. We have got Back to the Future.
Hello? Anybody home?
Yeah.
Hey, think with flies. Think.
We've got little sound effects now we're going to throw in there every now and again. Oh my God, I've always wanted to do this. Haven't we got another
this is
one,
like...
Michelle? We've got a Great Scott, I think.
Great Scott!
Oh, yes. What were you going to say?
Look, this is just like, it's like the big budget series too, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
It's massive budget.
We've ironed out all the creases in series one. This is like, series one was like, lock, stock and two. Yeah. Well, I was going to say lock, stock and two smoking barrels. And this is like Snatch. It's like we've got Brad Pitt, but instead we've got sound effects that Lewis has done at home.
Yeah. All the money, no content. That's what this one is.
21 gigawatts!
There you go.
There's
another one. I was hoping for them to be in a bit more brief so we could just kind of fly with it, but they're really long, aren't they, for what they are. But Michelle, you know, whenever it feels appropriate, just slam it on. I'll just keep talking, mate. Do you know what I'm saying? So we're in the second half of the film.
We are.
Where are we, Pete? Where are we? We're meeting Marty's dad for the first time.
Yeah.
What is he doing?
He is... in a tree.
He's in a tree, isn't he?
With some binoculars.
Yeah. Is he bird watching?
He should be bird watching.
Well, it is a kid's film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
What's he doing? He kind of is bird watching, isn't he?
He is. He's watching a bird.
A couple of blue tits.
Oh.
Or pink tits. Michelle, that was so good.
You cheeky, yes.
You cheeky little blighter. Oh, the timing of it. Oh, you never hear Michelle's voice, but you will now in the form of Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, love we did it. A whole series, and it took the word blue tits for her to finally pipe up.
Well said, Pete. Well said. So he's in the tree, and he's perving on his future wife potentially.
Yeah,
but Marty,
yeah.
He messes it up. That future is in question now, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
So he falls out of the tree. He runs off, and then Marty ends up getting hit by the car instead. So when he gets hit by the car,
yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So no, carry on.
That was great radio. Yeah, thanks for telling again. So he gets knocked over, Marty does instead, by the father, and then he gets dragged into the house, and his mother, his future mother, nurses him to full health. Right, so let's cut through this now.
Can I just say what I was about to say, but I stopped saying it. The reason I stopped it there is because I didn't know if you were about to say the same thing as me, and it's where Marty gets hit by, his granddad, whoever it is, but by the guy in the car, and then the guy gets out of the car and goes, Stella! I hit one of these goddamn kids with my car again. And it's like, how regularly are people up that tree watching her get naked?
I missed that. That's a very good point. Very good point, Pete. Very good point, Pete.
Great Scott!
Yeah. Christopher agrees. So that's good. It infers like there's so many people hiding up that tree to watch her get undressed.
Is she loving it, though? Do you think
if there's so many? She's playing.
Is she being a bit of a tease?
She is a little. She's a scallywag, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
Because then Marty wakes up and he's just in his underpants, and she starts calling him Calvin because that was the name of Calvin Klein make on his underpants. She's been giving a good cheeky gander to
his dog. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In the extras, in what we don't see. I don't know what she's done. I mean, did it just stop there? Did she just look, or did she pull the underpants to the side of it, have a cheeky little sniff? Right? Did she recognise that smell? Because that smell comes from her genetics. And then what did she do with her own genetics in the form of a cock? She probably fucking touched it. Sorry. Right, so he wakes up, and then what's his reaction to her as well? It's not one-sided, though, is it? Because there's a weird subtextual thing where he kind of fancies her back but doesn't want to. Like, you know, that kind of with you, when you're lads and you, like, see some sort of sexy kind of 17-year-old girl, you're like, oh, that's a bit, oh, no, that's a bit risque. It's a bit close to the bone. Don't fancy her. Oh, God, but you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, he's got that kind of attitude about his own mum. It's like,
I just think it's so messed up because, like, it doesn't matter how fit your mum used to be. She should not be giving you a semi.
Yeah.
Under any circumstances whatsoever.
There should be no conflict whatsoever.
Yeah.
If you see your mum in a bra and she's got big tits, you should think, Mum, are you not cold? At no point should you think they're a big juicy pair.
Yeah.
At no point should you think that. Because he looks at her and he's like, Mum, you're so... ... What are you going to say, mate? Are you beginning to find her quite attractive? Is that what that pause is? And then he says, thin. And it's funny, but it's like he uses the word thin instead of hot, basically.
Yeah,
is what
yeah.
He's getting to there.
Because we've all seen, like, you ever seen pictures of your mum from, like, 30 years ago when she gets them out? And, like,
gorgeous, you know, beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. And when she gets the photo out.
Oh, right. I thought you meant back in the 70s and 80s. Everyone's mum got their tits out.
But yeah, like, and you think, oh, Mum, you look really cool. But at no point do you go like, oh, hello, I wish I had a time machine. Do you know what I mean? Like, at no point, like, whatsoever.
You wouldn't.
No.
But this film absolutely peddles the fuck out of that theory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, this is the beginning of this really weird, unrequited loving relationship between the mother and son, which they really run with it in this film, don't they? So she nurses him back, he goes downstairs, he meets his future grandparents.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all like, who is this weird guy? She touches his knee under the table, doesn't she?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he's like, I need to get out of here because this is going a bit tits up, this is going a bit wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he meets Doc Brown, and then Doc Brown shows him the picture and he's like, oh, my family are disappearing. And it's like, yeah, because you've altered the course of history, mate.
Yeah,
You've stopped your pervy dad from falling in love with your pervy mother.
Yeah.
Because you want to be top perv. you're in danger of actually shagging your own mum.
Yeah.
And you need to shake her off. And he doesn't do a very good job of it, really, does he?
No, he doesn't at all.
I mean, have you got anything in relation to that,
actually? Yeah, he orchestrates an idea of how...
The Grand Master Plan.
Yeah, the Grand Master Plan. So
I've written this down as well.
So Marty McFly, what's happened is he's travelled back in time and he's accidentally made his mum sort of have the hots for him. So he's interfered with his own parents' meeting. So he needs to now figure out how he's going to get his parents back together. Okay. So what does he decide to do? Does he decide to, I don't know, organise, you know, a romantic dinner for them both? You know, make them both go to the cinema?
That would work.
Yeah,
that'd
that
be
would
romantic.
Work. No.
And innocent.
He decides to basically orchestrate a rape, which he is going to do. And
the most convoluted rape you could ever think of. The kind of wet rape which could really go either way. It could really backfire.
Because when he's telling his dad, George McFly, about it, he looks really uncomfortable. I don't think it's because he has to actually sexually harass someone. I think it's because it could backfire and he might end up shagging his own mum.
Yes. Yes.
He's worried she's going to consent.
Because what's the actual plan? He says he's going to take her out. He's going to get her in a car. He said he's going to come on to her.
Yeah.
And there's a big grey area here. Come on to her. What does that mean?
Yeah.
To the point where she does... He's going to push it so far. I mean, he's playing with fire here. With his mum, he's going to push it so far to the point where she'll try and push him away. So he's going to orchestrate sexual violence to the point where she's pushing him away. And then in that split second, hopefully, his dad's going to come in, beat him up, throw him off, and then take her off and live happily ever after. Now,
yeah.
At best, that is a dodgy way to get someone involved with your mum, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if it goes wrong, he's either actually he's molested his mum.
Yeah.
And she pushes him away and he's like accidentally done stuff.
Yeah.
Or she doesn't push him away because she fancies him. I don't know why he's got that idea that she might push him away. She welcomes it, his advances, and all of a sudden he's actually shagged his mum. And it's like, and it wouldn't be a problem. It would be quite a happily ever after story, really, because he'd pick up that little picture of his siblings and they wouldn't be disappearing. More of them would be coming back, but they'd all have six fucking fingers and three chins.
That's such a good point. Oh, I wish I'd thought of that.
Oh my God, they're all coming back and they all look like me and my mum. They've all got eight eyes.
It'd be brilliant if the film went that way.
Yeah.
Like, she did actually consent and Marty McFly just decided to go through with it and she was just, like, riding him in the car.
Yeah.
And George McFly's waiting there and he's like, yeah, not yet, mate. Not yet. Not yet. Lewis is just having... He's got a little bit of a cough, bless him. I know this is bad radio, me actually saying that, but we're a bit unconventional here. So, you're right, mate. You're right.
Yeah,
I've got such
a weird cough. I'm amazed that's the first time I coughed, to be honest.
I am.
I laugh, it sets it off.
You've been going when you've been talking, but I thought it was part of the whole Lewis Charlesworth delivery.
Right.
When you get really excited and you just get out of breath, you can't actually tell.
I've been doing gigs recently, and every time I do a gig, I cough right at the beginning, and then people sat there like, is this a weird joke? And I have to say, no, guys, it's not a real joke. And they're like, oh, so you are actually dying. And
yeah.
It makes it worse. But it's neither a joke and neither dying, so it's fine. Guys, I'm back. So basically, we've covered this. There's so much incest in this film.
Yeah,
it's just weird.
There's
more incest in this film than any other film I can think of, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got your primary dilemma is he needs to get back to 1985. But equally, the other dilemma, which is just as important, is he needs to stop his mum from shagging him. So,
yeah.
I mean, the film, instead of Back to the Future, it could have equally been called Back to the Appropriate Cock. Because all he's trying to do is redirect his mother's vagina away from his penis onto his father's penis.
Yeah, yeah.
What were you about to... Oh, Michelle, can I have a little thing there? Thank you.
Great Scott.
Thank you. And Pete, what were you going to say?
Just the amount of what the poor woman has to go through. So she's going through basically an orchestrated rape, which Marty McFly is sort of carrying out. And then he gets out of the car and then Biff comes along and pretty much starts doing one for real. Do you know what I mean?
Surprise, the foolproof plan goes tits up.
Yeah,
and actual rapist.
And an actual,
turns up. So you've got a pretend rapist.
Yeah.
The pretend rape doesn't go very well. And then an actual rapist turns up.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids are going to love this. So he opens the door and then he throws Marty out, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He throws
yeah.
him out and puts him in the truck.
And then he gets in.
With the black guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Crispin Glover, the father, who's the little weedlinger guy, turns up, who is playing it very much like an autistic kid, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
He turns up, he opens the door, sees that there, It's quite disturbing because LeVay is pretty much being abused in the at that point. He says, leave me alone, help me, help me. And then he says, just go away. It's quite a sinister moment, really.
Let's not forget she's 17 as well.
17.
Yeah. Because I mean, she says, when they pull up, they go, haven't you ever parked before, Marty?
Yeah.
She was like, I'm nearly 18, of course I've parked before.
Yeah, exactly. And she should be doing that.
What does that even mean, park?
Well, you know, it's a synonym for touching.
Yeah, but what was that? Was that like a 1950s thing or what?
Parking.
Like, gee whiz, do you want to go park?
Well,
what was it?
Well, growing up in Bolton, mate, in 1995, it was a bit of a thing then as well. even though I was 10 years old then. Sorry. Good. So, the dad comes in and Biff kind of tries to beat him up, and then that's the big denouement of the...
The denouement is back.
The denouement of the film is that the father of Marty turns around and knocks Biff stone cold out. Clean,
yeah.
Gets the girl, walks away to the dance floor, and it's just the lovely climax of the film, and everything's smooth sailing. But also, it's a bit dodgy as well, because how does he win the girl? He doesn't win her through cunning or skill or talent or intelligence or compassion. He wins her through beating the shit out of someone.
Yeah.
There's a weird kind of message that underpins all of this. But anyways, he moves on to the dance floor and they begin to dance together. A little ginger lad comes in, takes Lorraine away again.
Yeah.
How does he get over that hurdle?
Yeah.
Gets the shit out of him as well.
Yeah.
So he beats him up as well, gets the girl again. and then Marty starts, he debuts for the black guy who cut his hand.
Yeah.
Playing the guitar. And then we've got the classic moment there, haven't we?
Yeah. With the Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry.
And the Johnny B. Goode. Yeah.
He's got all the little flashes, all the influences. He fits them all in, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Chuck Berry, and he does a bit of Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah. Two very inappropriate guitarists there. First of all, there's Chuck Berry, who, let's not forget, had a 14-year-old girlfriend. Yeah.
Yes.
And then there's Pete Townsend as well.
Yeah, he does a Pete Townsend.
He does a Pete Townsend.
Very pedo.
Yeah. He got caught with his and his internet history.
And also, why is he playing the guitar? I mean, it's important this moment that he plays a guitar to get them to go in for the kiss together. Because if they don't have the first kiss, it's not cemented the relationship.
Yeah.
So it's really important that there's an extra climax there. He has to play the music so they'll dance together and kiss. So in a way, their son, their unborn son, is acting as a sexual lubricant for them to get on for the first time so they can have sex and create the son who performs the sex. So you've got a weird, incestuous, cyclical cycle of pedophilic incest.
Yeah, and then...
thank you.
And then at the end when he goes...
pedophilic
incest, brilliant.
Weird cycle of pedophilic incest.
And at the end, where he leaves them both and goes, "Oh, if your seven-year-old son, you know, if it turns out, you know, he spills, like, what is it? He accidentally sets fire to the carpet. Go easy on him."
Yeah.
I was watching that, thinking, like, mate, that is the least of your worries. Like, your parents are going to get to, your mum's going to get to a certain age. She's going to see you at 17 and think, "Hang on, he tried to rape me." That's like, do you ever think that sort of ruins the film? They're going to get to like a point like in the future and think, hang on.
So many of the characters, that happens quite a lot, that they have such like a weird relationship with their own history. Like later on when Marty goes home and then everything's great and they're all rich now and his siblings are really successful bankers and all that kind of stuff. And then his parents are great. And then now Biff is this really effeminate camp guy, because camp always equals weak in this film. And again, it's quite
Republican. And they've made him more bald as well.
And they've made him more bald.
Which makes no sense.
Yeah. It's like... And then he's cleaning the car and the parents are like, "Oh, Biff, what are you like?" And then they're like, "But, you know, you got to love him, because if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have met, would we?" It's like, well, you're seeing things through rose-tinted glasses a bit there, because, you know, what happened? Like, if only. Oh, Biff, he tried to fucking rape me, and it brought us together through sexual violence. You got to love him.
Great Scott.
Yeah, there you go. So.
And also, it teaches kids a really messed up lesson, because they're even like Biff is like their house slave now.
Yeah.
Like before, he was horrible to like George McFly. Like he was like his butt boy. Do you know what I mean? But now they're even worse to him.
So it's just the oppressed become the oppressors.
Yeah,
there's
yeah,
no kind
yeah.
of equal level pegging. It's like you're either yeah. you're either weak or you're strong. Yeah. The whole thing is survival of the fittest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, the message at the end is that they're rewarded through the car he's got and through the shiny house. Yeah. They live. It's like, why don't they just move to a better house? They just live in the same shit house, but it's just done up. So is that what rich people do yeah. in America? We're successful now. Should we upgrade to a 5-bedroom and a semi? No, let's still live in the hovel, but colour it white instead of beige. Yes, good idea.
Right. And why are the kids still living at home as well? If you're a successful banker, why are you living exactly. with your fucking parents?
Exactly. Right, fantastic. So I think we've covered it from head to toe.
We have, mate.
We?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like we've really put it through the ringer, which I was uncomfortable with at first because I've got so much affection for this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't afford to be like that because that's what the show is all about. It's just bad nostalgia, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like we brought it, Pete.
We have, definitely.
Right, so now we're going to have some words from our sponsors, and then I think you know what time it is, people. I think you do. It's film trivia time soon, isn't it?
Across the world, the real alternative, FabRadioInternational.com.
Bad nostalgia.
The hell are you doing in my car?
Hey, beat it, spook. This don't concern you.
Who you calling spook, Peckerwood?
We'll ruin your childhood.
Hello, we're back, Bad Nostalgia Series 2. Please do follow us on Twitter, at Bad Nostalgia. Bad Nostalgia. Not Bad Nostalgia, Bad Nostalgia. Some other little naughty person took Bad Nostalgia. They have 2 followers. still about 1 more than us, though. So, here we are. We are in the penultimate section of the radio show. I've really enjoyed it. Have you enjoyed it so far?
It's been great being back, mate.
Yeah.
It's been great.
You ready to do it every week for the next 6 weeks?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right up until Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. Christmas specials.
Christmas special. Yeah, we're going to do a Christmas special, people. So you've got to keep listening, right? Shall I do a little recap of what we've got coming up?
Yeah, yeah, right, yeah, okay. Mate.
For Series 2, we're kicking things off. We've got Back to the Future, obviously. Next week, Mrs. Doubtfire. It's an absolute stellar lineup, honestly. If last season was like West Ham, then this season is like Chelsea.
You know nothing about football.
I know nothing about football.
Why did you pick football?
I don't
as
know.
A comparison.
I know. I should have picked Tintin Books as a. Yeah. I can't even think of the word. I got. Oh God, my brain's gone.
You were just
Chelsea
like
not really good.
Not this season.
Are they not?
No.
Right. I can see the panic in your face going like, right, I've said a London team. I need another London-based team. What is it?
No, you're really overestimating how I thought. Pete, I was thinking of anything. I was reaching around for anything that came into my head, to be honest. Right, so we've got Back to the Future. We've got Mrs. Doubtfire. We've got E.T.
Oh.
And we might have a special guest for that one.
Oh, yeah. What?
Yeah, we might do.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I didn't tell you this, yeah.
No, you didn't.
Rosie, my fiance, might be coming onto the show for that one. And she's got a really interesting history with ET because she's always found it disturbing.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. But she might not. She might actually just watch us. we've got Little Mermaid, our first animation.
Arousing.
Arousing as well. Oh, Pete, don't get Pete started on mermaids.
Sorry.
We almost never got through Hook because of that, did we? They were pretty horny in Hook, though, weren't they?
So. They were.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah.
Oh.
Brilliant. Again, sex.
Yeah.
Ginger sex. Oh, there's a lot of ginger sex in this series. Santa Claus the movie, because that is, we're going to be doing that on the 22nd of December. It's going to, everyone's going to be feeling really festive, so no better time than to absolutely tear apart one of the best Santa Claus movies ever. Perfect. That's the one with Dudley Moore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
John Lithgow. I don't remember much about it, other than the tone of it was really pretty messed up for us.
Yeah,
a Christmas.
That's
film.
One of those films as well that I haven't revisited in 20 yeah. years, so it's going to be such
Same
a trip here. Watching it.
Literally haven't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At all. So that is a great lineup. There's no weak one there, to be honest.
Yeah.
If anything, I'm not. Well, no, I was about to say Little Mermaid, but I grew up with Little Mermaid so much.
Yeah.
I've never sounded more camp when I said that. But honestly, there's something in it for everyone. Meatheads, you'll love it. Meatheads, you've got your fork. You can do stuff with
you've
that.
Got
Meatheads,
your West Ham.
West Ham, you've got something for everyone in it. You've got West Ham, you've got Chelsea, you've got fucking Stevenage Borough. Right, so.
Stevenage Borough!
Those are the 3 football teams I know in the world.
Stevenage Borough.
Stevenage Borough. Don't even know where Stevenage is. Thank you, Michelle. So, we're going to do the film trivia time section now. Oh, you're going to like this. Very juicy.
Trivia.
Film trivia time.
Right, here we are. I've really enjoyed myself. We've been talking about the content of the film. Now let's talk about the content outside of the film. What was going on behind the scenes? Pete, I think you should kick this off.
I could only find a couple. But I'll kick things off, like, in terms of it being, like, inappropriate. Okay.
Right.
So just to touch. Just to touch on what we were talking about there, Crispin Glover, who obviously played George McFly, Marty's dad, he refused to do the sequel.
Yes.
Because he thought the film was just really capitalist. He thought all that's changed is that this family now have got a shitload of money.
Basically, and they're the now, points we made.
Yeah, the points we made. And they're now, absolute arseholes. All that's changed is that, you know, like they're really successful and they've got money. And it's like, that's the message of the film.
Yeah.
That's all you need, material things and a bald house slave called Biff. That's what you need to make it.
Bald gay house slave.
A bald gay, yeah.
That is so true.
Yeah. And you watch message. That, and you watch that, and you think, like, well, you should have done the film, but you do watch, and you think, yeah, that is pretty much true. Yeah.
And he said he hated filming that final scene because he was like really compromising himself by doing it because he did not agree with what he was doing. And you know, he is a guy who really has a conviction of his morals and stuff. Which is probably why he's not doing very well, even though he's a brilliant actor. To be honest.
Yeah.
Each to their own. You know, that's not really well done, Crispin. That really worked out. No, I love him though. But if you see what he's up to nowadays, it's like, oh, he'll do a cameo in Charlie's Angels too. But then his old side project will be like, oh, the fucking intellectual properties of a gnat. So, wow, what did that mean? I've got a bit of trivia. We've not mentioned this yet. Eric Stoltz,
yes,
was originally cast as Marty McFly. Yes. Eric Stoltz, if you don't know him, he is the ginger drug dealer in Pulp Fiction. Good. Right. He's a very underappreciated character actor, fantastic actor. If anything, he was too good, which is why he got sacked from the film.
Yeah.
About a month into filming. They filmed there's so much footage of him as Marty McFly in so many of the scenes. They were just went, no, cut. The humour's not coming through. This is not working. We need to get rid of you. And why did they get rid of him? This links to bad nostalgia. They got rid of him because he played it too straight and he played it too intense. And I'm going to be in his defence here, because what happened was they basically sacked him because they said, mate, you're just not bringing the humour out of it like Michael J. Fox can. You're just not a comedic actor. And it's like, well, look what he's got to... look what material he's got to work with. You're accusing him of not being funny enough when he's in a kids' film about a mum who's trying to shag her son. It's like, well, I'm sorry, I might play that a bit intense and serious as well. I would probably be looking a bit scary rather than cheeky chappy walking down the streets like, oh, with a big smile on my face.
Also, as well, I listened, this was quite a while ago, I listened to an interview with Thomas, I can't remember his name, the guy who played Biff.
Thomas F. Wilson.
Yeah, and he said he was a bit of a dick to work with as well. First of all, in the fighting scenes that him and Biff had, he really, really
punched him in the face.
He really, really roughed him up. And also, off screen, he was trying it on with Lorraine, with his on-screen mum.
Eric Stoltz was.
Yeah. He was trying to have sex with her, like, so off wrong. Screen. And I think, first of all, like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I've been in plays, and I think even if someone was playing my mum, like, in a play, I don't think I'd be able to go there
it
off screen.
Weird.
Do you know what I mean?
People would be making accusations, and that, in a sense, would be a turn off.
Yeah. And also, you think, how emotionally invested was he in the role? Do you know what I mean? If he was willing to shag his mum off screen.
Exactly. He's not even reading the script.
He's not, is he?
Just
yeah.
Up pissed.
Yeah.
Right. We've also got the fact that it went through so many rewrites and they went to so many different studios and it was turned down 40 times before it was greenlit.
Really?
The reason why it was turned down is because all the studios, apparently, right, they went to Disney. And Disney said, no, we can't greenlight a film that's about incest. Please go away. I don't care if it's a time traveling machine in it. Go away. It's about incest. So they went, all right. And then they went to every single studio under the sun. Turned down 40 times. Do you know why? Because they said there was not enough sex in it.
What?
Yes, that's what they said. Because it wasn't risque enough. Because in the 80s, it was the height of loads of, like, teen sex comedies. And they saw it like that. And they were like, mate, come on. She shags his son, but she doesn't even give him a BJ. She just fancies him. She just has a crush. It's not sexual enough, mate. Put more sex in it. So I think they did kind of they did sex it up a bit. Bob Gale, one of the writers, said
They raped it up. That's what they did. I don't know about sexed it up.
Yeah,
it's like, right, guys, we need to make this like a little bit more sexier. I was like, all right, how about he tries to rape his mum? No, that's too far. It's too late. We've already filmed it. It's going out tonight.
And then they went back to the studio. It was like, right, okay, we've got mass rape. Everyone tries to rape Ringo. Everyone tries. They're like, okay, we'll green light it. Well done. It's dirty enough. Because who had it in the end? It's not Disney in the end, is it? Who took it in the end? Was it Paramount?
Universal, is it?
Is it Universal? Yeah, because it's at Universal Studios.
We could get sued here. What's that? Can we even mention Universal?
Mate, we mention everything.
Can we?
Yeah, we plagiarise the shit out of everything. We have a trailer every week. We have great squat every 5 minutes.
That's a very good point.
It's an extremely good point.
No one's listening.
No one. As long as no one's listening, we can keep on doing this. Great. What a great paradox. Right, space travel paradox. So another thing I got was that the
if I could just get in my time machine and stop me from saying Universal.
Yeah. So with the two writers as well also said that the atmosphere in the test screening was really tense because it's full of kids, because everyone was scared the first time they put the dog in the time traveling machine. And the dog went into the future, you know, he does it as like a tester, and then he comes back a minute later. In that moment, the kids were absolutely terrified, and the cinema was completely silent because everyone was scared of what had happened to Einstein. And they were so scared because the two writers of the film told everyone that it was a serious film, that it wasn't a comedy. So they thought it was going to go down a dramatic route rather than a comedic route. And obviously, when they thought it was a drama and that the dog had gone, they thought he was going to come back, like, fried or something like that. You know, like in The Fly.
The Fly.
When he puts the monkey through it and it comes back and it's all fried. That's one of the most vivid memories of anything. Yeah, it's disgusting.
That's a point, actually, that I forgot to mention. Like, why the fuck does he put, like, Einstein in the car? Do you know what I mean? He could. Why didn't he get like a pet rat or something?
Yeah,
the car could like burst into flames.
He proper guinea pigs the dog.
Yeah. At any point, and the dog could end up. I don't know. Either one, like frying to death in like a car explosion, or two, just getting lost in the time circuits forever.
That is such a good point, Pete. I never thought of it. Such a good point.
Yeah.
Why did they do that? Yeah, why didn't he just actually get a guinea pig rather than use his beloved dog as a guinea pig? He's his only friend.
Yeah.
Does his dog still live in the past in 1955 as well? Because that is the oldest fucking dog of all time, then, if that's the case.
No. What?
Does he?
Is there a dog in
1955?
No.
No.
Is
right,
there?
Okay. I'm getting confused. Maybe the dog just time travels and I've seen it in different... Right, okay, sorry. Got confused there with stuff that's got nothing to do with the show. So, have you got any more trivia points?
That's it for my trivia,
there
mate.
Was a lot of trivia on IMDb,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah.
there? But not that much that was related to how messed up the film
Michael
was.
Jackson.
Well, we love a Michael Jackson link, but we're thin on the ground, aren't
he
we?
He crops up in Back to the Future 2.
He does.
Yeah.
Where does he crop up?
He crops up on a TV screen.
In the 80s cafe.
In the 80s.
And he is proper creepy as well.
Yeah.
Because he's like a weird latexy robotic version of himself. Isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah.
Which was not actually far removed from the actual Michael Jackson, so why don't you just get the actual Michael Jackson, because he looks like a robot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good, thank you, Michelle. Oh, we're really on it tonight. We're really on it. We're going to keep doing that, by the way, but we're going to get better with it. We're going to get better with it, because some of the clips are a bit long, aren't they?
They are.
So, have we got any more points here? We've got the Nevada test site. It's an atomic explosion. Right, no, that doesn't work. That's rubbish.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Eric Stoltz. They wanted him to... Sorry to go on about Eric Stoltz again, but they really wanted him to play Marty McFly because they were impressed with him as a young actor. Because do you know what his first debut film was before Back to the Future? It was a film called Mask. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, I think Cher was in it.
Oh, yes, it was good. He had
a big, fat latex head.
Yeah.
So he was like John Merrick, like Elephant Man, but in a modern setting. Yeah. And he played that, and they saw that performance and thought, let's try Marty McFly. It's like, what makes you think that the Elephant Man would be a good Marty McFly? I'm not a time-travelling, incestuous man. I'm a human being. Right, okay, good. So I don't know how we qualified. They obviously got it wrong anyway, didn't they? So, right, if you've not got any more points for trivia, Pete, then we will move on, I think, unless you've got anything else, sir.
Doc Brown has got a sticker on the back of his van that says a nuclear explosion can ruin your day, which is a bit inappropriate, really, when you think of, like, you know,
yeah.
when you see, like, you know, like...
Because a nuclear explosion, it really would ruin your day, because nuclear arms are not things to joke about, really.
They're not, really, no.
Yeah, good point. Love it. Right. So, that's... Thank you very much. That's the trivia bit all wrapped up now, and we're going to have a few more words from our sponsors, and then we're going to, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go with our little judging period of the show, where we're going to tally up the points.
When I listen to FabRadioInternational.com, it makes me smile. Bad news, a few of the things I'm probably doing at the time to make me smile, but generally I like to embrace the alternative and listen in to FabRadioInternational.com. Man, you are Mavis. That's like embracing the alternative. She's not a real woman.
Bad nostalgia.
Hey, you. Get your damn hands off.
Oh. George, help me. Please.
Just turn around, McFly, and walk away.
We'll ruin your childhood.
Hello, it's the final section of Series 2 of Bad Nostalgia with me, Lewis Charlesworth.
And me, Pete Phillipson.
Do follow us on Twitter at Bad Nostalgia. Tweet us right now. Any thoughts, any feedback, any suggestions for future shows you want to hear from us. I've just had a tweet, actually, from my beloved Rosie Phillips, who has updated us on the dog situation in Back to the Future. She said, back in the past, he has a little terrier, whereas Einstein is a big dog. Oh, she's very good with her dogs.
She is.
She is very good. She's desperate for a dog, actually.
Is she?
Yeah, she wants a sausage dog. But I don't know how we'd fit that into our lives.
You know what that's a stepping stone for, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Bigger dogs. Right.
Well rescued, Lewis.
Right, so here we go. We've got sex, language, violence, horror, out of 5 each. What do you give Back to the Future for inappropriate levels of sex?
Are we lumping incest in with sex?
Yes, we bloody are.
Yeah, then I'm going to give it a 5.
I'm going to give it a 5. Flipping heck. This is the most... In some ways, it's the most inappropriately sexual film we've ever...
Yeah,
ever,
yeah.
We've ever covered. Actually, it's up there with Big.
Yeah.
Big was up there as well.
Yeah.
So, language out of 5.
There's a few... I'm going to give it a 3.
3?
There's a few shits in there, I think.
Few shits. Yeah, there is quite a few shits. Holy shit. You're going to see some sorry shit.
Yeah. That's like a really iconic bit, and that bit is so inappropriate.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I almost rewatched it and thought, like, did he say that? What, like, when I was a kid when I used to watch that, he's like, you're going to see some serious shit.
And it gets like, it doesn't again make, and again and again.
It doesn't it, like, I don't know why he says it at that point, but I just think it doesn't fit at all.
I think they play up to that, because it's really funny in the context of the film.
Yeah, it's like one of the most iconic bits in cinema ever.
Yeah.
It goes, you're going to see some serious shit. It doesn't fit with Doc Brown's character. It doesn't fit with the tone of the film.
It's so funny, because it's like the last thing you'd expect a professor is to say is that, in the context of that. Yeah, it's funny. Violence out of 5.
Violence. I'm going to go for another 3.
Yeah. I think I'm going to do a 2. Yeah, good. Horror out of 5.
Horror. I'm going to go for a 2.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go for a 2 as well. There's not really that much horror, is there?
No.
There's that one bit where he does kind of blackmail his father into taking Lorraine out for a date by pretending to be Darth Vader.
Yeah.
When he puts the headphones on him and plays the music really loudly. That is pretty bloody terrifying.
Yeah.
Particularly for a little autistic lad. It's absolutely tragic, isn't it? Good. So...
I think for anyone, mate.
Racial bonus points?
Racial bonus points.
I just saved a cough then. I was on the brink. I was on the brink. Whew. Michelle had a finger poised over the cutting my sound out then. Racial bonus points out of 5.
I'm going to give it a 3.
Yeah, me too. God, we're copying each other, aren't we? So, out of 5, 10, 15, 20, we've got 8, 10, 12, and then racial bonus points, 3. I've got 15 here.
I've got 16. That's a high scorer, mate.
That is a pretty high scorer.
Is that all there with the Goonies?
No, Goonies was like bloody 40 out of 30.
That's last series, though, isn't
it? That was last series.
Yeah.
The league table this time round.
Yeah.
So last series. Right, so we've got 15 and 16. Very respectable. Very good start. I've really thoroughly enjoyed it.
I have. It's been great being back.
Yeah, it's been great being back.
What got next week?
Your faces. And we've got Mrs. Doubtfire next week.
We've got Doubtfire.
Ooh, that's juicy. We know what's going on there,
That's very juicy.
We always have to have a Robin Williams one every series, don't we?
Yeah.
Every series, all one and one.
It's my favourite one of last series, Hook.
Was it?
Yeah.
Me too as well, actually.
Yeah.
Right. I'd love to reminisce in silence with you on air.
We're getting nostalgic about our show called Bad Nostalgia.
Oh, meta.
Ironic.
Another paradox. See you next week, people, 9 o'clock every time. Or listen to our podcast whenever you want.